This is the MLW Radio Network.
Welcome to yet another episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling here on the MLW Radio Network, and this time of the year specifically about the G1 Climax Tournament that is going on right now. I'm your host Striga, I'm with my man Dylan, and Dylan, how have you been enjoying the G1 Climax so far?
You know, Striga, it has been a hoot at this moment.
Yes.
Through the first five nights of the show, I really love what we've seen from Block A specifically, but we'll talk about the last two shows. We did the first three nights on the previous show. I believe it was the first three. Was it the first three or the first two?
Yeah, we did the first one in one show with the BJW show, and then we did a show on the second and third night.
Yes. Right. That's right. We did the first one with the BJW show. Now I remember. I apologize to the listeners. You got to understand, I've had multiple concussions in my day. Sometimes I can forget. But this should be another excellent show, much like our last one about nights two and three. A lot of good opinions laid out there. And we get to these shows. Unfortunately, we had a tragedy on these shows, too, as well. And I know we have to get to. I like talking about positive things. I know we both love being positive about wrestling. But there was some really bad stuff happening in the G1 Climax this year.
Right.
We have to get it's going to be tough.
Yes, that's going to be tough, but let's just quickly look at the undercard stuff. This time we had a match that I thought was very interesting on the show on Saturday, with Tomoyuki Oka and Yuji Nagata defeating Hiroshi Tanahashi and Katsuya Kitamura. And I'm still not sure how I can define the color of Katsuya Kitamura's skin. It seems like it changes from every show to the next show.
Progressively getting darker.
Yes.
I wonder what the reason for that is.
I don't know. Yeah, definitely this was an interesting match, as they had the two big guys in there, the two big rookies, if you can call it that at this point, because they are already so good, with Yuji Nagata and Hiroshi Tanahashi, and this is really how wrestlers in Japan really pick it up when they get to team with veterans like Tanahashi or with Nagata. And Nagata is really the one that has been looking out for Kitamura and Oka, and it really feels like Nagata is the figurehead for Lionsgate.
Yep. He's in a great position right now, and I think he's the perfect man to do it. He was one of the ones that definitely has taken Oka specifically under his wing, and I think he's going to lead these guys into some really bright futures for all of them. I'm so impressed with all of them. We talked about it before. The Young Lions are awesome this go-around, and hopefully we can get on that, you know, Young Lions Cup going forward. But,
Right. Yeah,
that match was pretty good. I like that match. Oka and Nagata versus Tanahashi and Kitamura. Good stuff all around. Exactly what you expect from those.
Right. Like. Anything else from this undercard? We had a six-man tag match. Togi Makabe, Kota Ibushi, and David Finlay defeating Goto, Ishii, and Gedo. Was okay, I thought.
And all the matches.
We had Zack Sabre Jr. and El Desperado against Yoshihashi and Yado. Some cool stuff preluding Zack Sabre Jr. versus Yoshihashi that was going on the next night. But then we had Los Ingobernables against the Bullet Club.
No.
And there it is.
That was my reaction. This criminal, known as Bad Luck Folly, formerly known as King Folly, he lives under many different aliases. I think it's telling that he doesn't use his real name.
Oh, yeah.
Because if he was, he would be known as a felon.
Business where people usually only use their real names.
Yes,
like,
yes.
Like King of Darkness Evil.
Also Bushi as well.
Right, right.
Listen, you have not seen his driver's license. You don't know if that's...
I know. He could. His real name could be McLovin. I don't know.
Evil Watanabe was his real name. But so anyway, Fale grabbed Daryl, the beloved stuffed cat of Hiromu Takahashi, someone who uses his real name, not a criminal, just kind of crazy. Fale grabbed the beloved Daryl, and just. It was traumatizing what we witnessed here.
Yes,
he ruined him. He killed Daryl. Daryl's dead.
On the next night, Hiromu Takahashi came out. He couldn't even fist bump Tetsuya Naito. This is a broken man right now.
He has not tweeted or said anything in interviews. And as I mentioned, if you are a listener to the Lucha Talk podcast, I mentioned that I have my own version of Daryl, which is my beloved Bongo. That I've had since I was 2 years old as well. So I can only imagine me and Hiromu are very similar in many ways. I think most people could agree with that. But in this case specifically, my heart goes out to Hiromu. This was just devastating what we saw.
It was. And, you know, Dylan, you talked about it when Hiromu lost the IWGP Junior Heavyweight title, or Belt Son, as he was known, to Takahashi. You thought this would break him. But man oh man, Daryl's death was even worse than that. So,
just sad.
We have to see and wait how he rebounds from there and what repercussions are there for Bad Luck Fale. I don't know. Maybe we have to stop talking about him on this show and praising him.
I think that is. Don't worry, I think we'll stop praising him when we get to his match in a few minutes. Or a little while down the line. So don't worry about that.
Yeah.
I'm sure, don't worry, there'll be some sort of new... He'll find someone else. Okay. Hiromu will. A new Daryl that New Japan can sell and make money off of.
Alright, let's get to another mascot of New Japan Pro Wrestling, as Toru Yano picked up his first win in the G1 Climax over Satoshi Kojima. 9 minutes, 12 seconds. Match was pretty good, I thought. Again, I like what Yano did here. I like what Kojima did. Kojima tried to steal Toru Yano's pose and then was booed vociferously from the Kurokanola crowd. And in the end, Toru Yano won the match with a cradle version. Yeah, that was it.
All I know is I was promised no more 9 to 10 minute Yano matches. And what do we see just one night later? Not only was this bad, Tenzan was at ringside,
yeah.
So not only did Yano make Kojima look like an idiot, he also made both of Tenkozy look like an idiot. So I will give
them... That's Yano's shtick, he makes everybody look like an idiot.
Yeah, especially me, watching it, because that's what I feel like when I'm wasting 9 to 10 minutes on these matches. And I've seen multiple people say they skip all these matches, and I don't know why I don't do it too. I think it's your influence on these, Trigger.
It must
but be I'm glad I'm glad you enjoyed it. That's all I'll say. That makes one of them.
But then we got almost 12 minutes of Evil versus Juice Robinson in, think you could call it Juice Robinson's best match ever. Maybe his match against Kojima was better. Maybe this one was better. But still, both of his matches that he had here with Kojima and with Evil were awesome. And Juice Robinson, in the end, failed to pick up the win as Evil and him went to an amazing stretch of reversals of Juice trying to hit the Pulp Friction and Evil trying to hit his Evil STO finisher, and in the end he got that. But man oh man, what a great match up to that point.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I thought this was probably the best match of Block B up to this point. I'll go as far to say that I loved this match. I think Evil looked awesome. Juice looked awesome. I don't know what it is, because you... also, don't forget his match with Naito earlier in the year, Juice's match. So I think Juice just has great chemistry with these LIJ guys that we're seeing going on here, and I thought he totally delivered as usual. I think these two have been by far the stars of Block B, these two, and I love their match. No surprise there. Really great stuff for both guys. Completely agree with your point, Ed. You know, I wanted to mention something. I mentioned this on Twitter the other day, but I was going back and looking at Night 1, and if you look at when they introduced the blocks on the videos, the last man in Block A was Tetsuya Naito that was profiled, and the last man in Block B was Evil.
Yeah.
So, and they gave him new music as well going into this tournament. We didn't mention that earlier, but they edited his song to add bells to it, I guess you could say.
Right.
So they gave him kind of this new entrance theme. I'm kind of getting a good vibe from Evil. I think he's going to have a big tournament in points based on some of these little clues they're dropping right now. So, but I really enjoy this. Juice is awesome. How great is it that he's so beloved by the Western fans on Twitter? Because everybody's behind him right now, and he's totally delivering in the ring.
Yeah, not only the Western fans, but also his
fans
in Japan. Because that's what we love in wrestling. We talked about it. He climbed the ranks. He worked hard to be here. He worked hard to be in this spot, and it's paying off for him. So more power to guys like Juice Robinson. So, next up we had Minoru Suzuki versus Sanada. And this was, again, one of those matches where I thought, this has great chain wrestling, this is absolutely very, very good what's happening inside the ring, but everything else, you know, we were back to this stuff. When I talked about Minoru Suzuki and Kenny Omega, I said that everything in that match made absolutely sense in the context of the story they told, because they previously announced what they would do, and they did it. So the story made sense here. But here it was just, again, Minoru Suzuki having El Desperado by his side. And I you know what I want to see? We talked about driver's licenses and real names and driver's licenses. I want to see El Desperado's managing license. I want to see that.
That would be a great storyline,
yes.
if they did that in 2017. So yeah, I'm kind of with you on this one. I didn't like the match with Omega, and I didn't really like this one either, to be honest with you. Sanada, he looks okay. Like I said, this was about as good as you're going to get with these two and their current incarnations, I feel like. I think that's about the most positive I could be about it, but this will not be remembered by very many people, to say the least. I don't think by probably two or three shows from now.
Yeah. No, it won't.
I mean, that's about all you can say about it. It wasn't that good of a match.
Like, right.
That's all there is.
Yeah, that's true. Next up, we had Kenny Omega versus Tama Tonga. And there was a really, really interesting approach to that match, as Tama Tonga, very early on, laid out Kenny Omega, took the mic, and made another reference that goes into the direction of small cracks within the Bullet Club, as he mentioned that Kenny Omega wants to be the elite, and at the same time claims to be, or is seen as the leader of the Bullet Club, and Tama Tonga apparently is fed up with that, and so he mercilessly took out Kenny Omega's leg that was worked over by Minoru Suzuki in his prior matches. That is what he also did in one of the prelude matches in the tag undercards. And here he took out Kenny Omega until Kenny Omega was able to make his comeback and finally hit the Katayoko no Tenshi. But I thought this again, within the storyline, this was a very good match. And Tama Tonga, he really proved that he can be a centerstone of this Bullet Club storyline.
Yeah, you know, I was really impressed with Tonga here. I thought he did a great job, not just in his moves necessarily, but more his facials, his aggressiveness that he showed. He had a really big edge to him here that we didn't really see the night one, and I thought it was totally justified with what you mentioned in the storyline, and it makes perfect sense when you think about it. You know, Omega and the Young Bucks have been doing this forever with this elite stuff. Why wouldn't the other Bullet Club members not be happy about it, you know? So I thought it was great. I thought it was great that they just kind of had a straight-up match. There were some things here and there with Omega. Again, we talked about it with the leg selling. Yeah, there's a lot of those. I'm sure if I find another review, I'm sure I'll have that four or five times in the paragraph. But I thought Taga really carried this here. He had they had just a fun dynamic together. You know, Omega, when he got on, he did some good things too. So it was just a good match. Really solid match on the show.
Yes, definitely was. But then, Dylan, we have a match that is a current total rating of 9.53 on Cage Match.
Wow.
With Katsushika Okada, the current IWGP Heavyweight Champion, defeating Big Mike, Michael Elgin. Elgin's second singles loss in the G1. They went almost 26 minutes, and what a great showing for Michael Elgin, who, even in defeat, looked incredibly strong, and he totally lived up to his Big Mike gimmick when, for example, catching Okada when he did his dive over the guardrail, and Elgin just catched him and threw him back onto the mats surrounding the ring, and all kinds of crazy great spots in this match. Michael Elgin catching Katsushika Okada in the corner, delivering a German suplex, and Okada again showing that he barely holds on to the great streak that he has when he again went to hold his opponent's arm before being able to finish him. So many, many great callbacks to prior Okada matches, and just a great showing for Michael Elgin.
Yeah, I really like what Big Mike brought to the table here, as well as Okada. They both worked really well together, actually. Had a lot of really underrated chemistry, I thought, that you know you may not expect or whatever from them, but they both really did a great job. I thought it was a really strong match. You know, I'd also say this. Not only did Elgin look great, and this was definitely a great match, definitely one of the top, you know, if it's not number, you know, it's definitely one of the top few matches of the Block B thus far, and of the whole tournament, really.
Yep.
You know,
For a lot of people, I saw that on Twitter, for a lot of people that came totally unexpected by it, but I expected great things from Elgin in the G1.
Yeah, me too.
To begin with.
Yeah, I think Elgin's super underrated. Last year, I thought he was the top wrestler of all the, just overall with all of his matches, I thought he was the most consistent and the best one. And I think he's getting kind of underrated because of just some, I don't want to say blunders, he just hasn't been focused on that much in New Japan this year, and I think his kind of hype has gone down, if I'm articulating this as well as I want to. But, you know, when I look at this, you talked about Elgin losing, and Okada winning again, and when I look at this, Okada, to me, is on such a prolific run right now as champion, and which I think is great, because I'm always a fan of treating the champion strong. Whatever you want to say about Okada, I love that the champion is treated strong. And when I look at him, I kind of have having a hard time, like, in my mind, justifying anybody beating him in this tournament. And in terms of not just beating him, but having enough losses to where he doesn't make the finals, just, I don't know how they're going to pull that off with how, because he looks so strong right now, and in a good way. I think that's going to be interesting how they tackle this issue.
Yeah, at this point, I really believe that he is going to be this one guy that, in the end, wins all of his or most of his remaining matches to get the great comeback story, because I have him winning his next two matches. That would be against Satoshi Kojima and against Kenny Omega. So,
oh, you're talking about Elgin?
Yes.
Oh. Yeah.
Oh, you were talking about Okada too, right?
I was saying how nobody. I was saying the champion.
I
don't know who you're talking about. I don't know what title he holds, but I was saying I don't think Elgin is a whole other thing. But Okada.
But I think that could go for either guy. That's why I thought you were talking about Elgin.
No, I'm saying like I don't know how anyone can beat him.
Yeah.
With how strong they booked him, they haven't booked Elgin strong at all. Long before the G1.
Yeah, but I thought because Elgin looked so great against Okada here.
That is the
confidence that maybe was not there for other Elgin performances before.
He's always great when you give him a chance. Just look at his matches with Naito in the last G1. When they give him a chance, he'll deliver. But I was talking about Okada, like I said, and when I look at it, he's been booked so strong that it's hard for me to imagine anyone beating him in this tournament when it comes to multiple losses and enough to where he wouldn't make the finals.
Yeah.
Because I feel like he, he's going to need that to not make the
final. But I'm still at that point that it's also hard for me to believe that a lot of people beat Michael Elgin. He's lost twice now, so I don't see him losing much more, actually.
Yeah, yeah. I think if they want to, if he's going to make the finals, he can't really lose anymore at his point. But to Okada, what I was going
to say, need like 12 to 14 points to make it to the finals. So basically, yeah. Elgin has to win everything now.
And Okada would have the tiebreaker over him if it came down, which is another important point to in terms of making the finals. You're going to have to probably beat Okada if you want to make the finals to get the tiebreaker. And you know, I was thinking about it because he's been booked such a strong champion, and it's been so great to see him a champion booked so strong. Say what you want about Okada, but I do like that they protected this title so well. And in this tournament, I had an idea of which, what if, because we think that Naito is going to make it in Block A into the finals at this point. I think we can both agree on that. I think a lot of people would say that. But what if Okada and Kenny Omega won every one of their matches until the last night to where Omega could beat him and go to the finals and lose to Naito? And I think that would be a good way to get out of Okada making the finals, but also having him lose a match. And it would be good that way.
Would create a very interesting triangle situation here for the remainder of the year. I'm just looking at my pick-ems here. We talked about Okada. I just saw that I have him losing to both Ingo Van Nables in his block, to both Sanada and Evil.
Ah. See, now that would set up Evil or Sanada as well, if they could get the tiebreaker. That tiebreaker is going to be important, I'm telling you.
Yeah. I think especially in this block, and Kenny Omega is going to play a huge role in this tiebreaker situation. That, I think, is definitely happening. But, Dylan, before we get too much into pick'em mode, just let us look at the next night of the G1 Climax, Day 5, from the Mashida City Gymnasium, a show that is rated right now with a current total rating of 7.45, which is the worst-rated G1 Climax show, which is funny to say, at 7.45 on Cage Match.
Still good, though.
Still good, though. It was a good show. We had two very good matches here, two great matches. But let's start from the bottom. Tenkoji beat Katsuya Kitamura and Michael Elgin in 4:41. Little bit short. I would have loved to see more from Kitamura here. We had Suzuki-gun, El Desperado, Suzuki, and Taichi defeating Finlay, Kawato, and Juice Robinson. Some good previews to Juice Robinson and Minoru Suzuki. Minoru Suzuki again being relentless on his upcoming opponent here. And Juice again fighting with a lot of heart.
And Kawato showing so much heart in attacking Suzuki and defending the young lions here.
Right.
And how great was that? I love Kawato, man. He's my favorite of all the young lions, and he continues to deliver. I'm telling you, Suzuki's role that he was born into is to fight all the young lions.
Yes,
that is what I want to see with
him. He already did that when he was in All Japan. Always when the young lions were guiding the way to the ring, you know, Suzuki would always kick them in the face or in the stomach. Did the same thing with Sho Tanaka and Yoe Komatsu, so he's picking up it again here. And Hirai Kawato, as you just so brilliantly said, he's taking sides for the young lions here and standing up for them.
Heroic.
Yeah, he's heroic, but in the end, it caught up to him when we have this great visual of Minoru Suzuki appearing behind Kawato when he was fighting Desperado, and Minoru Suzuki just being Minoru Suzuki, choking him out, and well, that was it for poor young Hirai Kawato.
Yes, poor Kawato. I'll tell you, all the young lion shows, he should be on fighting someone. And maybe Kawato, maybe this could lead to that. I'd love to see a singles match between those two.
Oh, yeah. We had Hiromu Takahashi's first appearance after one day after Daryl, teaming with Evil against Tama Tonga and Chase Owens. Man, It's tough.
Did you notice how Takahashi came out acting like he was still holding Daryl?
Yeah, he was still petting his beloved Daryl.
I know. I loved after the match where after Evil won with the Banshee muzzle, strong booking for Evil continuing in the undercards.
Right.
Tonga tried to come up with him. It hit his gun stun to set up the next match, but Evil totally countered and tossed him aside. So I like that a lot.
Second night in a row where Tama Tonga was kind of outclassed, so to speak, because when Omega beat him, he kicked the fallen Tama Tonga in the back and acted as as if he was much, much stronger and better than his Bullet Club member. And here again, Tama Tonga coming up short could maybe lead up to him defeating Evil.
Yeah. Right, we could see where that goes.
But let's start. No, we had one more match here with Zanada and Bushi defeating Okada and Ghetto. And I really like the interactions that Zanada and Okada had. I think I can see that Zanada is picking up a little bit more confidence, and he's main eventing with Okada. He's slowly but surely coming into his own here in the G1 Climax, and I hope that in the end, after this tournament, we have a much more confident Zanada than we had before.
And I really like Bushi and Gato's interactions this match as well, especially the finishing run they had there. I thought the teams worked well together. We know about Okada and Gato, but Sanada and Bushi have a really good chemistry together too, so that was nice to see.
They do, yes.
It'll be an interesting match to see tomorrow with Okada and Sanada, see where that goes.
Always like when Gato takes the bump for the MX. Always looks great.
Yep.
Another match that I really enjoyed was Zack Sabre Jr. against Yoshi-Ashi. In just under 12 minutes, maybe one of the shortest matches in Block A. Just see that Bad Luck Fale and Naito, they went just a little longer, a few seconds longer than Sabre and Yoshi-Ashi. But what I wrote on Twitter was that Yoshi-Ashi is fighting with a lot of heart and with a lot of fire, but Zack Sabre is doing pretzels, and he was really picking limbs here with every move that Yoshi-Ashi did. Zack Sabre Jr. had some submission predicament for, and so in the end it was the Manjigatame that got the win for Zack Sabre Jr. Again, a secondary finisher.
Oh yeah, they're definitely listening to the show right now, Stringer. They're taking cues from us right now. We always love those secondary finishers. And who better than Zack to do it, because he's Mr. Technical, Mr. Submissions. He's got a million potential finishers he could bust out. I thought this was a good match, and I like that they kept things simple. They didn't go out here trying to have a classic match or anything like that. They just did their things. Like you said, a shortish match. Nothing wrong with that, though. They did good jobs. Both guys worked their style and what they did well, and I like that it was a good styles clash kind of match. I especially love the part where Yoshi-Ashi went for the loose explosion Swanton Bomb, and Zack countered it right away, and that led to the finish where he did the Manjigatame. But also, before that, he had a triangle, which Yoshi-Ashi had a great struggle to. I really loved the fire and the struggle that he showed there, which is something I always harp on, is something I enjoy seeing.
And Yoshi-Ashi was trying to counter this triangle. And unlike in the match with Kota Ibushi, where Kota Ibushi then, out of this triangle, hit his sit-down last right powerbomb on Zack Sabre Jr., Zack Sabre was able to prevent the powerbomb here and go back to the triangle. So progression in Sabre's G1 Climax experience here. Just a good little match here, as you mentioned, not too fancy. They were in position 6 here on this show, so they're not the main event. They are in position 6, and they just had a good match for this position.
Yeah, and I really enjoyed both men, and I think both men have had really strong tournaments thus far. Zach's been one of the best guys.
Right. Then position number 7 was probably one of those matches that you could argue should have been the main event of the show, with Hiroshi Tanahashi defeating Yuji Nagata. And Dylan, there is magic in the air when Hiroshi Tanahashi accepts being a bad guy. When the crowd tells Tanahashi, "We don't like you in this match," then Hiroshi Tanahashi really thrives on that.
And we've seen it so many times before in the past, and yet again it pays off in this match with another strong performance. Nagata is so over right now. Nagata, to me, if he's not the top guy, which would be, it's either him and Ibushi are my two favorite people in the tournament thus far with their performances, and I think Nagata again delivered another strong match in addition to his first two with Yoshi-Ashi and Goto. This may have been a tiny bit of a downgrade over those two matches, but still such a strong performance for both men. And Tanahashi did a great work too on his own. My only problem here, I think out of all the matches especially, I think Nagata really had an opportunity to take this one. Because it would have set up a intercontinental title match, one last title match for Nagata, if anything else. And just, we see this stupid story played out over and over, and it's just, nobody wants to see it, and it just, it sucks. Like, it honestly, like, this storytelling sucks with Nagata, and like, just, we've seen it so many times over and over. It sucked the first time, but it especially sucks now, particularly when Nagata is one of the best guys in the tournament, and really deserves a lot better. So, I'm already starting to feel fatigue with this 0-3 start of his. That's giving me a bit of a headache, and I don't like that. But and I don't understand the point of Tanahashi winning here. There, this would not have hurt him whatsoever to lose this. And I want him to go.
Man, this is such a classic G1 climax match. I'm just looking it up. How many times these two faced each other in the G1 climax? And
man, they're 2007. They wrestled each other a few times, and I believe one was in the G1. In fact,
nope. Oh, yeah, it was. It was the G1 Climax final when Tanahashi beat
Nagata,
right?
Yep.
G1 Climax 2011, 2012,
I tried to set 14,
you up. 17. So a lot of times they wrestled in the G1 Climax, and they wrestled also in the New Japan Cup twice. And, of course, they had some great bouts for the IWGP Heavyweight title. So this really...
To me, these two will always be connected due to Tanahashi breaking Nagata's record.
Right.
Like, this
right.
is a great long-time rivalry between these two.
Yeah, and then in 2011, Nagata was the one that went up to protect his own record against Hiroshi Tanahashi, but in the end came up short. So in their last big singles match, probably would have been nice to see Yuji Nagata getting a win here.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, it's still a great match.
The match itself was absolutely fantastic, and you know what played into it being so fantastic was that Yuji Nagata was busted open during the match, and it at one point looked like he was crying blood, but it was just this cut under his eye that made for a great visual and added a lot to the match, I thought.
Yeah, like I said, these guys are the true professionals, both of these guys. When you talk about Tanahashi knowing when to play heel, he knows exactly when to turn it on, too, which is great.
He definitely does. Next up, we had Bad Luck Fale against Tetsuya Naito in a not-so-good match. I think they had one match prior in the G1, and it also wasn't that good. Those two don't have very much chemistry.
Nah, this was not a bona fide hoot right here between these two. This was a pretty poor match. And it felt like things were kind of going off the rails pretty fast at Naito.
Yes.
So someone, if this was Tanahashi, he could have brought it back, but Naito just kind of gave up on it, and neither man looked very good. I don't think there was a good performer in this match. It's not good. So, Fale's had a couple of lackluster showings early on. Step it up.
Yeah. Naito didn't take the opportunity to take revenge for Daryl's death here, as Bad Luck Fale defeated him with the Bad Luck Fall. The first time that he had to pull out the Bad Luck Fall here in the tournament, I think. And Naito took a great bump on it, and the Bad Luck Fall is always a deadly finisher. At least that worked out very well in this match. Just looking when they faced Naito. They faced in the 2015 G1 Climax. Yeah, I remember that.
I think that may have been Naito's first match under his new gimmick.
Yes, it was the first day of the G1 Climax, and he beat him with a jackknife cradle back then.
Yeah, I remember that. And Fale got his shoulder up, but they counted a three anyway.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. But we're probably going to see this match again now that Fale won in the future. So get ready.
Alright, so next up we had Kota Ibushi versus Tomohiro Ishii. And I absolutely
brighter days are ahead.
I absolutely have no idea where to start with this match, because I just loved it from start to finish. This was everything I wanted from this match, and I think even a little bit more than I expected. So Dylan, please take me through this. It was just a roller coaster ride for me.
Yeah, I mean, they started off, these guys had such a great matchup together in terms of styles making matches. They really worked well together. They've had their match before that was great for the NEVER title, which was also a great match. Ishii early on, You saw him go for a headbutt early on, but Ishii got scouted it, avoided it, and went to his MO, which was kicks. And we saw lots of great kicks from Ibushi in this match. And but there was a, I love their point when he went for his kind of, he went to go after his chest with the kicks, but Ishii just brushed him off and fired up and threw him into the corner.
That's one of my favorite parts of Ishii matches, where when he just says, "Nope, not working."
Yeah, exactly. Ishii spit in his face at one point, and things just went. Things really got crazy then. So yeah, this was just a great match. He went for the lawn dart again match too.
This move.
yeah. It was crazy. And we had the Ishii. They seem to be pushing Ishii with this one count kick out too that they're giving him. That we've seen it in definitely his match versus Goto, and I believe he had one against Makabe. But he definitely had one here, which I thought was great. And he's kind of like the only one doing that right now, which I think is kind of a cool gimmick, even though he's losing. It definitely fits him here. This was an excellent match. Definitely one of the best of the tournament. And there's no way. I think Ibushi is the star of G1. If not Nagata, he has to be number one. And Ishii is looking great, as nobody is surprised by it. Just two great wrestlers having a great match. I thought they worked brilliantly together.
Yeah, Ibushi is just such a wild card on these shows. You never know what to expect from him. His match against Tetsu Naito had many great high spots. His match against Xavier had lots of submissions and great strikes. This one here had great strikes too, and also great fighting on the ground. And just everything is so different when you have Kota Ibushi in there.
Yeah, I think it's not just Ibushi though. It's more that is to his opponent,
right,
as well. He's got some great draws. He's got some great draws in terms of wrestling different styles. And I think there's going to be some people who we may be about to talk about, who kind of have gotten the draw facing very similar opponents each time. But Ibushi has gotten a great draw, and he's made the best of it. Being a chameleon and ready to face each of these men's different styles and blending in so well. You know, that chameleon style that he's got is just awesome. And he's done a great job, and I'm looking forward to see what he's got going up next. I think despite the fact that he's had these great matches with all these different types of guys, I think there's still a lot of greatness yet to come for him. We've still got Goto, Tanahashi, Nagata, all on the back burner. I think him and Fale are going to have a really strong match too. I think Ibushi is in line for a very great G1 in terms of purely in-ring performance.
Definitely. We talked a lot about different styles and different matches in the G1 Climax. I gotta say, you know, one man that doesn't have a lot of variety in his styles is just Hiroki Goto. I gotta say, his three matches that he had against Ishii, against Nagata, and now against Makabe were all good, but I just don't feel it with Goto because it's always the same for me.
But that's not fair, because look at his opponents, Makabe and Ishii. Did you even see the first half of the Goddess match? That wasn't the same.
Right, that's true, but it still in the end was one of these heavyweight rushed finishes in the end. But
I guess.
You know, it's just with Goto, I don't feel like I feel like he's having a lot of similar matches in the G1, and he will have a lot more of them going forward.
I don't see that at all. I think that's to his opponents. Like, that's,
I don't know,
Makabe and Ishii, what kind of matches did you expect them to have against Makabe and Ishii? Like, Ishii would have had two similar matches with Ishii or with Goto and Makabe.
Yeah, maybe.
And you weren't thinking that. If Goto faces Ibushi, you think he's going to have the same kind of match as he did versus Makabe?
No, of course not, because Makabe is totally different. That's a good point. Yeah, maybe I'm too negative on Hiroki Goto.
Well, I mean, you're right, though. Like, you're right, but I just think you have to count, I would rather you say that let's see if he faces some different guys first. Let's see what he does against Naito and Tanahashi and Ibushi, who are all a lot different than Makabe and Ishii. And the Nagata match was different.
Well, I've seen Goto against Tanahashi, and I don't expect very, very different style than he goes here.
They've had very different matches in the past.
Yes, they did. Yes, they did. Yep. I feel like Goto. I just feel like that Goto is trapped in this style that he's working right now.
I think he's one of the best chameleon workers, actually. It's just he's stuck against a lot of the same guys early on. I think you're going to change that opinion.
I hope so, because I usually very much enjoy Hiroki Goto's singles matches, but I didn't enjoy them up to this point, I got to say. I did enjoy the
Are you crazy?
I did enjoy the first two ones, but this one, not so much.
Look at his opponent, though.
You mentioned this point numerous times now, and I'm willing to take a look at Goto again.
So he had great matches with two great workers and had an okay match with an okay worker.
Yeah.
It is basically what we're saying. Like that's another point of my point. And actually, I thought this was a good match. I don't understand why people complained about this being the main event. It was a Makabe's
home. No, of course. I would never complain about that because that's just...
Not you.
The point... Yeah, I know. The point that we were making when we talked about this match before, it was Makabe's hometown, and of course it was headlining, so... But yeah, it was a good match. But you know, I've seen this. I've seen this match.
I just think Makabe's matches with Ishii and Goto have been the two best that he's had in forever. I would say this and the Ishii match were both kind of the same because it's Makabe. I don't think you can put that on Goto. But I thought still, though, even though this was kind of the same, I thought both men were motivated. The crowd was into it as well. Obviously, with Makabe's hometown being on the line here. And I just thought it was... I honestly thought this was one of Makabe's best matches I can remember. Besides, between these two matches, the Goto and Ishii, what has been Makabe's better match, you know, besides that Okada match that everybody knows?
Exactly. Just going to mention Okada, yes.
Yeah, that was 4 years ago. So right, what does that tell you? He has one good match in four years. That wasn't a part of a tag team with Honma. So, you know, like I said, I mean, I don't like Makabe that much. But I thought, in his defense, his matches with Goto and Ishii have been both solid. And that's more than you can expect, but I think he's someone that you're going to look at the end of the tournament and say, yeah, you know, you may not like him that much by the end of the tournament. If you want to talk about similar matches, he, I think, is definitely a poster child for something like that.
That is 100% true, yes. But it ended a good night of wrestling here with the fifth night of the G1 Climax. They drew a sold-out house with 4,598 fans, and they also sold out Kurikan Hall three times in a row over the weekend. So this G1 Climax really is very successful. They set a new record in Hokkaido with the opening show of the G1 Climax. And overall, I feel like this is probably, when you take all five shows here, one of the best starts to a G1 Climax that we have seen in a long time.
I think Block A has been very prolific in particular. I was talking about this with somebody, my main man John from the Wrestling Omakase podcast. Yes, exactly. Shout out to my friend. And he said something, we were talking about it, he said something to the effect of Block A, he would give like an A-, and Block B would be like a D+. And that's about where I'm at. Maybe a little higher than that, but that's kind of where I'm at. Block B, I feel like if you showed most of Block A to a fan that's new to New Japan or a non-fan, they would say, holy cow, I have to watch this product. If you showed a Block B, you'd probably say, why do you watch this? Like, sometimes, even though they've had some great matches, particularly on night four, I really like the Evil of Juice matches, but I just feel like it just has not connected with me that much. Block B has it, but Block A definitely has. I think Block A, I really look forward to all their matches. As I said, even somebody I don't really like Makabe, has held his own pretty well, and some guys like Ibushi and Nagata have over-delivered and been awesome. Not over-delivered to me, because I love Nagata, but they've been awesome. Everybody's been awesome. Block A, I feel like. And Block B still has some. I think Evil and Juice are great. I think their matches are well worth watching. If you take them out, I think Block B's been real lackluster.
Well, I wouldn't say Block B was lackluster, but...
D+, baby.
B+, is not lackluster.
D+.
No, I'm not going for a D+.
Well, I'd say it's more like a C+, if I...
Definitely wouldn't go for a D.
If you take Evil and Juice out of this, there's not a lot to really
You didn't like Omega versus Suzuki, so that's putting it up there for me.
Yeah. Oh, well, I guess. If you like that one, I guess. And Okada and Elgin was a good match, too. I love that match.
We'll see how that proceeds. The G1 Climax is
still a long tournament to go.
Right. That was what I was about to say. But Dylan, the G1 Climax is good and fine, and it was great. It was a great start here, but we had some other wrestling over the weekend in Japan too. And I just for the end of this podcast, I want to touch on two shows that happened over the weekend. One of them was the Kobe Pro Wrestling Festival 2017 from Dragon Gate. They had in Kobe World Hall, drawing a claimed sold-out house of 9,800 fans.
Oh my.
We know that this place doesn't hold almost 10,000 fans. We know that. But that's Dragon Gate. And
it's magic.
It's magic. They had a show. I haven't seen the show yet. They had a Open the Triangle Gate number one contendership tournament over the course of the show with three tournament matches. The tournament was in the end won by the Jimmies, Jimmy Susumu, Ryo, Jimmy Saito, and Genki Horiguchi, H.A. Jimmy. They beat Kotoka, Big Ashimizu, and Benkei in the finals. And then right following that match, the Jimmies, they lost to the Open the Triangle Gate champions, Shingo Takagi, Takashi Yoshida, and El Lindaman. And also on this show was a Open the Brave Gate title match with Jimmy Kagetora defeating Flamita in a little under 15 minutes. As I said, I haven't seen the show. I just read that this match sadly wasn't as good as expected. A semi-main event for the Open the Twin Gate Unified Tag Team title, CK1, Shima and Dragon Kid defended against Masato Yoshino and Naoki Doi, which caused a lot of uproar on Twitter as people were expecting the Speed Muscle team to take the titles here from Shima and Dragon Kid. And in the main event, T-Hawk lost, which actually came as kind of a surprise to me. Kind of a surprise to me, I gotta say. In the end, Yamato bursted out a modified version of the Galleria, which was called the Ragnarok, or as you would probably pronounce it in English, the Ragnarok.
Yeah, I used a move called the Ragnarok, by the way, when I wrestled.
What was that move?
It was like, how do I describe it? Do you know, like, the Doi 555?
Yeah.
It was kind of like that. The throw between the legs, right. Like, kind of thing. The face buster.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the same as this.
So you're saying that Naoki Doi stole the move from you?
That's exactly what I was saying. Okay. It was kind of like that. I'd have to do it to explain. But it's a cool name. That's the point. Ragnarok is a cool name.
It's a great name, and probably Naoki Doi had been watching Dylan Harris tapes, so shout out to
Dylan Fox.
Dylan Fox, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Another show that I watched today was the show from DDT in Kirken Hall, drawing a little over 1,200 fans for their show on the Sunday, where in the main event was Konosuke Takeshita defeating Keisuke Ishii in about 18 minutes. And Dylan, the storyline of this match, I don't know if you've seen that yet. The storyline was Keisuke Ishii was trying to break Konosuke Takeshita's neck with all kinds of crazy moves. Like, for example, he did a breaker onto the barricades of Kirken Hall, where you go from the bleachers to the ground floor seating. He did a German suplex onto the ring apron, all kinds of craziness here. And in the end, Takeshita was able to defeat him with the surprise rose in a very good main event, but I cringed for some of those neck spots he did. He did a tiger suplex too in the match, so Takeshita should be doing other stuff. He's 22 years young and he's got a long way to go, so don't expose your neck like that. But then, after that, Konosuke Takeshita was attacked by Naomi Yoshimura, who up until this point held one of the Right to Challenge Anytime Anywhere contracts. So after going 18 minutes with Keisuke Ishii, Konosuke Takeshita had to defend his title once more against this great rookie sensation of Naomi Yoshimura. And in the end, Takeshita, after a great fight that he again showed, he was able to defeat Yoshimura. So they built Takeshita up really well with two strong defenses here on this show. And the man he's defending the KOD Openweight title against on the Tokyo Ryogoku Kokigugan show on August 20 is Tetsuya Naito, and he won his match in 2:34 against Shuma Katsumata with the Tetsuya in the Sky. And so they are main eventing Sumo Hall for DDT. And one match I want to mention on this card too was a cool little tag team title match that went 11:32 with Shigehiro Irie and Katsu Sada Higuchi defeating Shuji Ishikawa and Matt Pauly, just four heavyweights. And on commentary, they were mentioning that Shuji Ishikawa is now in the land of the giants, which for them is All Japan Pro Wrestling. Wow. Yeah, so cool little show. You can check out the main event and the tag title match. Didn't see the ladder match that Daisuke Sasaki won over Joey Ryan. But I quickly want to go over the card that we have for Ryogoku Peter Pan 2017 now for August 20. We have a match for the Iron Man Heavy Metal title, which is right now held by Mao Kurone. So it's a Tokyo Joshi Pro Offer Iron Man Heavy Metal title battle royale. And basically everybody from Tokyo Joshi Pro is going to be in there, I guess. Just a nice little showing for them in Sumo Hall. We have a debut match of a rookie called Yuki Ino against a opponent that is yet to be named. We have a match for the KOD 10-man tag team title that is introduced. And I think they announced that Toru Owashi and Makoto Ishii are leading the two teams, and they have to search for teammates now. We have a cool tag team three-way match with Isami Kodaka and Yuko Miyamoto going against Mike Bailey and Mao against Kotaro Suzuki and Soma Takao. So the question here is, will Soma Takao defend his undefeated streak at Ryogoku or at Peter Pan shows, I have to say.
Ooh.
Cool match next up also with Jiro Ikemen Kuroshio against Shunma Katsumata, two of the greatest lightweight guys in Japan right now. KOD six-man tag team title, we already mentioned that on a show prior to that. To this one, Kudo, Yukio Sakaguchi and Masahiro Takanashi, champions defending against Dick Togo, Yasuo Urano and Antonio Honda. We have a Caballera contra Caballera match for the DDT Extreme title. One of those guys is going to lose his hair. It's either going to be the champion Daisuke Sasaki or his challenger Akito. And special shout out to Jesse, because I know that she doesn't want to see either one of those guys losing their hair.
That's going to be a real shame.
Zanshiro Takagi takes on Dan Shokudino, which will be very fun, I guess. Tag team title. Very fun in different ways.
I like how you described that. That was what made me laugh. More than
very innocent fun.
Yeah, very innocent.
Maybe. KOD Tag Team Title, very interesting matchup here. Shigehiro Irie and Katsusada Higuchi defending against Harashima and Naomichi Marufuji. How do you think that is going to play out?
Should be pretty good. That's interesting that Marufuji is on this DDT show. I wonder if that signifies anything. We've seen Marufuji work in different places occasionally.
Yeah, well, they sent Katsumata and Mao to the Noah Tag League.
Yep, that's right. So, yeah, this should be a really good match, though.
Yeah.
When do you think Harashima and Marufuji will take the titles?
I don't know. I can really see Harashima beating Irie again.
And we have to take right there.
Or maybe Irie pins Harashima on this one and loses another singles match. So we
yes.
have to wait again for the first singles win that Irie gets over Harashima.
I think Harashima should win the KOD title. Again, make him champion.
Yeah, for the KOD title in Sumo Hall, main event, Konosuke Takeshita against Tetsuya Endo. Just a great signal from DDT that they trust these two guys to headline the biggest show, the second biggest show of the year by now, because they sold 11,000 tickets in Saitama Super Arena, and they are not going to sell as much here. But still, Sumo Hall is a big show for them, and this card, I think, is very good. Some very interesting matches here, and I'm always looking forward to the Peter Pan show because it's a lot of fun.
What I want from you is that you have a dream about how many people they draw, much like you did for Big Japan. That's what I want to see.
Okay, I'm trying.
Okay, you give us the update.
Yeah, I will.
Yeah, you set the record straight on that. But I think that's good. The main event, these guys have a very long feud that they built up to this point, so I think that's great that they built it up this long, and I think this should be the climax for it. And who do you think will win? Will Lee Peter Pan with the KOD title?
Actually, I see Tetsuya Naito taking it.
Naito?
Endo. I'm sorry.
That would be a big development.
Tetsuya Naito cashing in his G1 Climax trophy in DDT.
Yeah. That's a definite possibility, I could say. But I think I'm going to go with Endo to win it. That's my prediction. But we'll see how that plays out.
I changed my prediction from Naito to Endo.
Oh, okay. So Naito gets left out in the cold. He again gets screwed by the powers that be.
That's right. Oh, man. Dylan, that's a good signal that we have reached the end of the show. I'm totally wasted from the weekend that I had. And yeah, I'm still a little glad that we were able to do this show on a G1 Climax free day. But the G1 Climax is, of course, rolling on. And if you enjoyed us talking about the G1 Climax, you can also get into interaction on Twitter with us, and a lot of people have done that, and we got some takes on Suzuki and Kenny Omega that we talked about on our last show, and keep the takes coming. You can tweet me at STRIGGA, and you can tweet Dylan at Dylan0Sky. And Dylan, how did you enjoy the Twitter interactions that we had so far?
Oh, I love talking to people on Twitter. I always say this.
Yeah.
Like you said, I love everyone's takes, whether they agree with mine or not. It doesn't matter. Just talk to me. I'm very lonely without you guys. I think we don't understand when I say that. So, but no, I really enjoy talking to you guys about all sorts of wrestling, especially the G1 right now. It's so big. And everyone should tweet Striga and say that Ragnarok is one of the best move names possible.
Yeah, I like the Ragnarok. Ragnarok. Sorry.
Yeah. Yes, make sure to say it in German style. I say what I named mine, it wasn't because of the Vikings or any of that German stuff. Yeah. It was actually, in reference, a lot of my names were based on, like, video game stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So, Ragnarok was the main, like, a big move that you could do in Kingdom Hearts 2 with the Oblivion Keyblade. As a counter to the Oathkeeper Keyblade, which is the light, like the Oblivion was the dark Keyblade, and the Oathkeeper was the light one. So I like those. I like those names. And Ragnarok just sounds. That's all I'm saying on that note. But please talk to us on Twitter about everything, and listen to my other show, Lucha Talk. I'm actually going to be recording another show of that tonight. We talk about all sorts of lucha stuff going on. And including our own hair versus hair match that will be coming up between Sam Adonis and Blue Panther, which that's not a lot of hair being put on the line, but it should just
gonna ask.
we'll see Sam Adonis in All Japan later this month too, so we may see him bald when he comes. He's traveling with Caristico when he comes at the same. So it should be a lot of fun there. Can't wait to do the show. Can't wait to talk to you guys. I can't wait to continue doing this show with you. Because I love the G1 right now, and I love talking about it.
Me too. I enjoy this very much. Around this time of the year, I have a lot of more time to watch and to talk about wrestling. So I hope we get to do some more of these. But for now, this has been the Easton Lariat. Thank you for listening, and goodbye.
Sayonara.
This is the MLWRadio.com network.